The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wanna take a ride? Broadcasting from the sprawling outskirts of the Florida Everglades in the intellectual wilderness of South Florida, the outer regions of humanity that people move to just because it doesn't snow. This is the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, here we go. So, did you see the debate last night? Oh boy, I did. So if you didn't, that's okay, because I watched it so you didn't have to. I am Nicole Sandler. Thank you for being here today. We got so much territory to cover. Sadly, the guest we had scheduled had to cancel today, but that's a good thing because it just today, because I love Juliana Furlano, but she's a little under the weather. But we have so much stuff, and I wanted to open up the phones today too to see what you thought of, the debate and everything else going on in our crazy mixed up world. So we will, though, begin, as we tend to do, with a bit of comedy for your listening pleasure to get a laugh or two out of the way, because I promise you, you're probably going to get angry along with me as we listen to the crap that's spewed today from the Orange Menace. Oh, my God. And you might get a little frustrated with what happened last night at the debate. But first, a video from Now This. And damn, I wrote down the name of the woman singing, and I honestly can't find where I wrote it. But it's in the credits at the end of the video, so I will have it for you on the flip side. So here you go. It's a parody of an old favorite. Take it away, Cyndi Lauper impersonator. Hey.
Trademarks in China, sexual harassment, like grabbing vaginas, spilling intel, putting spies at risk, obstructing justice. He's a thug, he's a crook, he's a president. Crime after crime, when he's gone, well, the book they will throw.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails.
If Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think you might want to listen.
China should start an investigation into the Biden.
Siding with Putin instead of the CIA, reducing his debt load by demanding lower interest rates. Hosting summits at Mar-a-Lago. He's a con man, a crook, that's our president. Crime after crime, pardons dangled to White House aides to break the law. Grammar mangled. He's a grifter, a crook, that's our president. Crime after crime, he's insane, narcissist.
Crime after crime. Her name is Jen Houston. All right, now we know. That from nowthismedia.com. Again, her name is Jen Houston from nowthismedia.com. Really good stuff. Now This Media does really good productions, and this woman, Jen Houston, is very good. Today's song parody, I you know, hey, feel free to send them to me if you come across some of these, because I go on the hunt every morning to find something funny to kick the show off, because God knows, dog knows, we have so much serious shit to contend with. So today, it's just you and me. Feel free to call in with your thoughts. The phone lines are open, 954-889-6410. If you're new to the program, just know that I work without a producer, so the calls are not screened. What happens is I'll notice, hopefully, when you call in, and I'll punch in your call. I could see your phone number, by the way, so don't call to fuck with me. But I'll say your area code. I can just take one at a time, so it's just all, you know, luck of the draw. But there, you know, I want to start, I guess, with the news. There's break before we get to the debate last night, because now we have the whole hour to go through this stuff. So I will give you. Ben Banner in the YouTube chat room just asked, I like that song. Is it available for purchase? Look up on YouTube, Now This Media. That's the account. And you know what? I'll post the video with the blog on today's blog at NicoleSandler.com. It's under, I think it says show archives or something like that. Because when I said blog, people didn't understand that's where the show was. I need to make it clearer on the website. Anyway, NicoleSandler.com under today's show. You'll find it. I'll post it there. Anyway, so yes, lots of stuff going on. Well, the debate, just we'll get to it in depth, but just for a thumbnail sketch, as it were, I thought Bernie was on fire. I thought he rocked it. I thought there was no question that he won the debate, if there is such a thing as a winner in these things that aren't really debates, but whatever. Whatever you want to call it. Warren did well, although I got to say, during that second question, the question about when they got to Medicare for All, she just won't say the words that, yes, taxes will go up a little bit, but they it will be, what's the word I'm looking for? Ugh, I'm having brain fog today. It'll be... you know, equalize. It'll be offset. That's the word I'm looking for. It'll be offset by the fact that you won't pay healthcare premiums anymore. You won't have a deductible and you won't have copays. That's what she needs to say. And she wouldn't come out and say it. And after a while, it was annoying that they kept pressing her on it because it was apparent she wasn't going to say those words. But she needs to say those words. Aside from that, I thought she did great. So we'll get into a lot of the clips. If you have a specific moment you want to hear from, maybe I can help you, you know, and play a clip. We'll see how it goes. But before we get to that, news, breaking news, the House of Representatives moments ago passed a resolution opposing Donald Trump's decision to end U.S. operations. Calls on Turkish President Erdogan to immediately cease military action, calls on the U.S. to continue supporting the Kurds, the U.S. partner in battling ISIS, and urges the White House to, quote, present a clear and specific plan for the enduring defeat of ISIS. Now, the vote in the House came shortly before congressional leaders met at the White House with Trump on Syria. I guess that's going to start soon. By the way, it passed with a 354 to 60 vote. 354 to 60 with four lawmakers voting present. Can you say chicken shit? Yeah. In other news, General Motors and the United Auto Workers have reached a tentative agreement on a new contract, and the union will decide tomorrow whether to continue the month-long strike, while the deal is voted on by union members. So that's good news. Of course, you know, Trump had nothing to do with it, but he's going to just take credit for it anyway. So I'll tell you what, we have what's news. Let me play that for you just to get you caught up on the other stuff happening today, because, you know, in addition to last night's debate, there's testimony going on Capitol Hill. There's shit going on. So I want to keep you posted on it. So let's do that. All right. And we'll come back in 6 minutes and delve into the rest of the news and the debate and so much, and your calls, too. So, all right. Take it away, Nicole.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Nancy Pelosi emerged from a meeting of the Democratic caucus on Tuesday to announce they will hold off on a full chamber vote on authorizing an impeachment inquiry.
There's no requirement that we have a vote. And so we, at this time, we will not be having a vote. And I'm very pleased with the thoughtfulness of our caucus in terms of being supportive of the path that we are on in terms of fairness, in terms of seeking the truth, in terms of upholding the Constitution of the United States.
And in a closed-door deposition Tuesday, George Kent, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State responsible for Ukraine, told House investigators that he was instructed to, quote, lay low, focus on the other five countries in his portfolio, and defer to Kurt Volker, Gordon Sondland, and Rick Perry, who called themselves the Three Amigos, on matters related to Ukraine. This according to Congressman Jerry Connolly of Virginia. Vice President Mike Pence, who met with Ukraine's president in September and discussed the frozen military aid, will not comply with the subpoena of House impeachment investigators. Neither will Rudy Giuliani, ostensibly the president's personal lawyer, nor will the Office of Management and Budget, which appears to have withheld security funding from Ukraine at Trump's urging over the summer. Yes, they're also defying a House subpoena. So while Trump's stonewall remains in place for some, the parade of witnesses with real information continues. On Wednesday, it's Michael McKinley's turn in the hot seat. He's the former senior advisor to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who resigned just last week, and has firsthand knowledge of the inner workings of the State Department and can speak to the morals and administration strategy there. Well, the fourth Democratic debate is in the history books. CNN and the New York Times asked the questions Tuesday night, and it was a snore fest. On top of the boredom, and with a record-setting 12 candidates on the stage, the fact that they wasted valuable time on a question about Ellen DeGeneres' friendship with George W. Bush, but asked not a single question about climate change or immigration, is a travesty. The framing of the questions was also problematic. Once again, I call for the League of Women Voters to take back control of the debates. But the Reader's Digest version is that Bernie won. Elizabeth Warren, aside from her unwillingness to answer the question about taxes going up under a Medicare for All system, held her own against a pile-on from those looking to make a move. At the end, Bernie teased a special guest joining him at his big welcome back rally in Queens happening this Saturday. The location gave it away for me. And yes, the campaign later confirmed that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will be there to officially endorse him. We'll have a comprehensive look at the debate on Wednesday's Nicole Sandler Show, heard on Progressive Voices at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Or after that, the podcast is available at NicoleSandler.com. The situation in northeastern Syria is cataclysmic, and it's all on Donald Trump, as immediately after a phone call with Turkish President Erdogan, he announced via Twitter on Sunday that he'd be pulling out the 1,000 troops stationed there, backing up our allies, the Kurds, you know, the people who successfully fought back ISIS, thereby clearing the way for Turkey's long-planned incursion to wipe them out. On Tuesday, Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo flew to Turkey to meet with Erdogan and negotiate a ceasefire. Well, on Wednesday morning, we learned of two developments. Erdogan says he will not meet with this U.S. delegation, saying he'll send his VP along, adding, "When Trump comes here, I'll be talking." He also announced, quote, "They say declare a ceasefire. We will never declare a ceasefire. They are pressuring us to stop the operation. They are announcing sanctions. Our goal is clear. We are not worried about any sanctions." Lovely. And as for the mini insurrection that was brewing, in which more than a few Republicans criticized Trump's actions regarding Turkey, Syria, and the Kurds, well, never mind. With obvious pressure from Trump land, Republican lawmakers are dialing back their direct criticism of the president. Instead, they're working with Trump. Yeah, unbelievable. Oh, and here's breaking news. Rudy Giuliani privately urged then-President Donald Trump in 2017 to extradite a Turkish cleric living in exile in the United States, a top priority of Erdogan. This according to multiple former administration officials familiar with the discussions. And then there's this. Charlotte Charles and Tim Dunn are the parents of 19-year-old Harry Dunn, who died after being struck by a car driven by a U.S. diplomat's wife in England. The driver, Ann Sakoulis, then fled the country while claiming immunity. So the parents are here in the U.S. trying to get the driver to return to the U.K. so police can interview her. Well, on Tuesday, they were invited to meet with Donald Trump at the White House, where they were ambushed. They learned that the driver was in an adjacent room waiting to meet them. Trump and his newest national security advisor had the press corps waiting in another room, ostensibly to record the meeting between the grieving parents and the woman who killed their son, who's refusing, with the backing of the administration, to go back to England to face the consequences. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, which means I really can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com. Please click on that donate button. Okay, we are back. I never left, but we're here. All right, so much going on. We've got the two chat rooms going at YouTube and at NicoleSandler.com, the Listen Live page. So feel free to weigh in there. But if you want to, call in, feel free. I noticed there are a lot of trolls invading the YouTube channel today. To Travelese Lady, who just wrote, Nicole, what do you think about Elizabeth Warren's Republican history? She grew up in Oklahoma. She came from a Republican family. A lot of people take on the party that they were raised in as their own until they, to use a popular word in the vernacular, until they got woke. I think she, used to be a Republican. I don't think she ever really embraced those values, but it was just what she was raised with. And then when she, realized what was going on, she changed her party affiliation. People do change. She's nothing like a Republican now. And you know what? People do things when they're younger. Any other questions? Feel free to call in. 954-889-6410. And yeah, Diane Russell just said she left the party after she started teaching bankruptcy law and realized that the Republicans were no friend of the average American. The more you know, as NBC likes to say. All right. So I watched that 3 hours of that debate last night. And I got to say, it was awful, awful. CNN, they were terrible last time. And I thought maybe they learned a lesson because, they took a page from ABC's playbook and introduced the contestants, because it just so seems like a game show, doesn't it? The candidates before the actual 8 p.m. start time. Now, there were 12 people on the stage, which is too fucking much. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Is the way I'll put it. But their questions were just terrible. They were written to try to get them in gotcha. It's just that they've all been like this. It's not only CNN. ABC was terrible. The NBC debate was even worse. So this is nothing new. And as I said in What's News, they need to bring back the League of Women Voters for an actual issues-centered debate. Not one question on climate change, not one question on immigration or Trump's, policies at the border. But yes, they had time to ask about Ellen DeGeneres and her embrace of George W. Bush. Seriously? You could hear the audience groan. And a few times during the 3 hours, I dozed off because it was just horrible, horrible. So anyway, I went through, I pulled a lot of the clips that I thought were interesting. Again, you're welcome to call in and weigh in. 954-889-6410 is the number. You can Skype me at Nicole Sandler, all one word. Just be aware that I work without a producer, so there's no screener. Nobody's going to answer the phone. When I see the line is ringing, I'll bring in callers one at a time. When you're on, So just keep trying if you want to get through. So let me see where to start. You know, and I wonder if I should even start with the debate or start with what happened today. Because today was so disturbing. You know what? We'll get to the debate in a minute. Let me tell you about today. So the Prime Minister of Italy is visiting the White House today. And Donald Trump did what he does, which I think is, and David warned me yesterday, I'm using the word treason and I shouldn't. He's a traitor to his country. Because to be guilty of treason, you've got to be involved in war and really do something on behalf of our enemies in war to actually be guilty of treason. So let's not take it that far. Although I think with the situation in Syria with the Kurds, there is war involved. So, you know, I'll leave that one up to the attorneys. But OK, so he's got the Prime Minister of Italy there. He was going off about a WTO ruling or something. I didn't even pay attention to that because, frankly, there's so much shit flying that you're constantly having to dodge and duck and to you know, avoid incoming. So what he's doing, though, that is so abhorrent is when he has a foreign leader sitting with him in the Oval Office or by his side for a press conference, as he did both today, he badmouths his political adversaries. He badmouths other Americans in conversation with a foreign leader. It is not okay. It's not okay. It's just not okay. So he's there sitting with the guy, the president of Italy or prime minister of Italy, and the classic picture was the interpreter. The person who was translating into Italian and from Italian to English, or I think the guy was translating into English, the Italian translator looked shocked and stunned as she's having to translate what Trump is saying to the Italian prime minister. So, here's Donald Trump. Sorry, and there's a little bit of Trump sound, but just to hear how fucking absurd he sounds. This is Trump saying the Kurds situation has nothing to do with us.
In the meantime, our soldiers are not in harm's way, as they shouldn't be, as two countries fight over land. That has nothing to do with us. And the Kurds are much safer right now, but the Kurds
no, they're
know
not.
How to fight. And as I said, they're not angels. They're not angels.
Oh, fuck you. Take they're not angels.
You have to go back and take a look. But they fought with us.
Yeah.
We paid a lot of money for them to fight with us, and that's okay. They did well when they fought with us. They didn't do so well when they didn't fight
what
with us.
What is he talking about?
I refused to allow the Americans a year and a half ago to fight with the Kurds against Iraq.
Okay.
I said, wait a minute.
So he's rambling about nothing and making no sense. What else is new? But he went on like that. He rewrites history. Like, this was my favorite. I was actually in the car. My car was in for service. I was picking up my car, driving home, and listening to this live on wherever they were broadcasting it. And he, oh my God, Donald Trump explained why Russia is no longer called the Soviet Union. I want to make, what? I'm having phone problems. I'll have to restart Skype. That's why no one's calling, because my phone issue is happening. Hold on. All right, let me stop that. And I will restart it, and then hopefully the phones will work. Sorry if you were calling and couldn't get through. All right, so while that's rebooting, this is Donald Trump, Trump-splaining to the world why Russia is no longer called the Soviet Union. Oh, my God.
Now, Russia was involved in Afghanistan. It used to be called the Soviet Union.
No.
Now it's called Russia for a reason.
Yeah.
Because they lost so much money in Afghanistan that they had a downsize.
What?
A very big downsizing. So if Russia wants to get involved with the with Syria, that's really up to them.
Oh, my
they
God.
They have a problem with Turkey. They have a problem at a border. It's not our border. We shouldn't be losing lives over it.
Oh, my God. So Russia used to be called the Soviet Union, but now they're called Russia because they spent so much money in Afghanistan that they had to downsize. So they downsized their name from two words to one. He doesn't have a fucking clue. This is an embarrassment on the world stage. It's just sickening. And then he talks about, you heard the clip I cut off. I just couldn't take it anymore. This is the last one I'm playing, I promise you. From him, anyway. Saying that, the Kurds are doing fine. They're safe. And, whatever. I can't even paraphrase what he says because it makes no sense. But here he talks about, so we pulled our troops out of there because we have to do away with these endless wars. And then he talks about sending troops to Syria. To Saudi Arabia. You want to hear why he's doing that?
If people aren't respecting what we're going to be doing, that's too bad. You read where we're sending some troops to Saudi Arabia. That's true, because we want to help Saudi Arabia. They have been a very good ally. They've agreed to pay for the cost of those troops. They've agreed to pay fully for the cost of everything we're doing over there. That's something you have never heard before, I think, as long as you've been standing out there. I think the media has never heard that before.
What?
But Saudi Arabia has graciously agreed to pay for the full cost of everything we're doing for them.
What?
We're sending some tremendous missiles over. We're sending some great power over to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is paying for 100% of the cost.
Oh, so that makes it okay?
Including the cost of our soldiers.
Including the cost of our soldiers? If they die, if they get killed fighting for Saudi Arabia, who, I'm sorry, are not our friends. The hijackers on 9/11 came from Saudi Arabia. I'm sorry, I'm yelling. I'm just fucking angry. Are you fucking kidding me? And if somebody dies, they're paying for the soldiers? Really, what does a life cost? Trump, tell me, what does a life cost? But I guess now he just looks at the U.S. military as mercenaries. You pay us, we'll come fight your wars. If you don't pay us, well, fuck you. Because all we care about is money. And if you're an ally of ours, well, that doesn't mean anything. NATO, fuck NATO. We don't care about NATO. We're just going to keep, we're going to suck up. I'm going to suck up to Putin and Erdogan and Duterte and Kim Jong-un and all those strongmen because I want to be just like them. Unbelievable. So this is going on, right? One from column A. The Trump's mercenary forces of America, where the Saudis are going to pay, they're going to pay for our soldiers. I want to know what price he puts on a human life. And who authorized this? Don't you have to get congressional authorization before troops can be sent elsewhere in the world? That 2001 AUMF that authorized to fight the people who attacked us, maybe authorize us to go fight against Saudi Arabia because that's where the hijackers were from. It doesn't authorize us to fight on their behalf. God, it's infuriating. All right, the phone's working again. And look who's calling. It's my husband. Hi, David.
Hi. First of all, the Russians evidently are empty nesters, so they're downsizing.
Uh-huh.
And second of all,
fucking idiot.
Fuck Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes.
I have no intention of being kind to war criminals.
Nope, me either.
And for her to sit there and say that we need to be kind to George W. Bush, fuck her. Next on the list, fuck CNN. They suck at doing debates. They should never be allowed to do another one.
Mm-hmm.
And last, but certainly not least, fuck Pete Buttigieg and his condescending, arrogant,
oh my God,
dumbass who should never be allowed to, not allowed, he should never get a vote running for president because he's no more qualified than Wayne Messam.
That's right. And Wayne Messam is still allegedly in the race. He's the mayor of Miramar, Florida, which is two towns over from us. That has a bigger population than South Bend, Indiana. Just saying.
And Wayne Messam, unlike Petey, is black.
That's true.
So he would appeal to that segment of the voting population on a much higher level than Petey would.
Probably.
But regardless, even leaving that to the side for a moment, he's every bit as qualified as Petey. Petey needs to go the fuck home.
I agree. Thank you for that, David. Thank you, David. All right, I'm going to move on. Hi, who's this from the 631 area code?
Petey needs to go the fuck
Oh, hello. Your radio was on. You got to listen on the phone. Hi, that's you.
Hey, Nicole, it's Shalel.
Hey, Shalel. You're calling from Charlottesville, aren't you?
No, I'm up in New York.
Oh, okay.
Taking care of my parents.
Gotcha. Okay. So what did you think?
I just wanted to bring up the story about the 50 nukes that are stranded in Turkey.
Yeah.
Are nuclear bombs that they're holding hostage.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, that's and it's pretty close to the Syrian border. Mm-hmm. It's kind of worrying. I mean, what are they doing there? I mean, who are they targeted
at?
Well,
here's the thing. You know what? Turkey is still a member of NATO, which is insane.
Right.
So they're allegedly allies. But Erdogan has been moving further and further into this authoritarian space, you know, the place where Donald Trump wants to be. And he's just gotten more and more off the rails. There was a question asked at the debate last night, and frankly, I didn't pull any of that audio because there was nothing really exciting there. But let me see through my notes if I can even find it. Here it is. Is Turkey still a U.S. ally? Should he still be in NATO? And most of them said no. You know, no, they shouldn't be. You know, Donald Trump, of course, he wants to kill off NATO, doesn't understand the value of it. And I'm sure, look, there's pluses and minuses to any kind of foreign policy. But you don't fuck over your allies. And that's what Turkey is doing. And that's what we're doing. And I guess that's what Donald Trump likes to do. And yes, we have five nukes sitting in there under their control somehow.
Yeah, that's scary. And it's just an atrocity what they're doing to the Kurds that, you know, our military is just, they're so upset. I mean, everyone I've, you know, seen channels where, you know, they've been talking about it. They're just disgusted.
Oh, they're horrified.
Know? They put
they
so much
mortified.
Of their heart and soul into trying to support the Kurds against ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now we have reports of ISIS fighters that were locked up getting out into the wild again. I mean, I really, what a mess.
Yeah.
I'm just so glad that you're there
to
help us stay sane. And I'm really excited about your move when it happens to live radio.
Yes.
I'm glad you decided to do that.
Me too.
And I wish you the best of luck with it. Thanks so much. You're our lifeline here.
Oh, thank you so much, Shalel. Shalel is in various various chat rooms as both Shalel and Osama number 5. In case you frequent some of our chat rooms, we got the two going. Phone lines are open. We'll get to them. If you have a particular cut, a part of the debate that perhaps you watched last night and wanted to wanted to comment on that, feel free. I pulled a lot, obviously, with 3 hours. I didn't pull it all, but we'll see. So let's see. Where should we begin? There was so much. Let's go through what happened, and I will I'll talk you through the they started with going through all 12. They didn't do any opening statements. They started by polling all the candidates on the impeachment of Donald Trump. Why impeach him? Why not just wait? The election's only a little over a year away. And to a person, got to give them credit for this. They were all on the same page, basically, all saying, impeach the motherfucker. Here was Elizabeth Warren.
That this president had obstructed justice and done it repeatedly. And so at that moment, I called for opening an impeachment inquiry. Now, that didn't happen. And look what happened as a result. Donald Trump broke the law again in the summer,
mm-hmm.
broke it again this fall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we took a constitutional oath, and that is that no one is above the law, and that includes the President of the United States. Impeachment is the way that we establish that this man will not be permitted to break the law over and over without consequences. This is about Donald Trump, but understand, it's about the next president and the next president and the next president and the future of this country. The impeachment must go forward.
Thank you,
yes,
sir.
It must. And someone in the Shepherd Brook in the YouTube chat room asked, even Gabbard? Actually, she did. Tulsi Gabbard was the last one to get on board with the impeachment, and I didn't even make any notes next to what she said. Funny, my notes next to Pete, to Mayo Pete, were blah, blah, blah. And my notes next to Tulsi were blank. And it goes on like that. But yes, they were all in agreement that we need to impeach the motherfucker. The next question was directed at Joe Biden, was about the Hunter Biden thing. And frankly, let's see who's calling. Hi, who's this? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Excellent. This is Roger in Minneapolis.
Hey, Roger. What's on your mind? Did you watch the debate last night?
I'm not strong enough to tolerate
that. I hear you. You know, wine helps.
But I did listen to some of it on the radio, and it's very obvious that it's being planned and programmed to have certain effects. Let's not forget that it was no secret back in the early 2000s that the CIA had operatives in the newsroom at CNN that were vetting and crafting what went out over that network.
Mm-hmm.
This was common public knowledge, and not the stuff of rumors, but confirmable. And at any rate, I, for one, don't particularly support your move to what will be the 5 p.m. time slot in the Twin Cities, because I like to listen to you as soon as I can.
Oh, thank you. But it'll help the show if we move to 5. Frankly, you know, when Randy moved her show back to 3 Eastern to go head-to-head with us, we lost a lot of our live audience. So I like being able to take calls. I like being able to, you know, have the most current information, so it makes sense to move to 5 Eastern.
Well, I'm pulling your leg a little bit.
Okay.
What it caused me to do was abandon the first hour of Randy's show and then listen to you over Progressive Voices afterwards.
Thank you. Wow.
I do very much appreciate your contribution, and thank you for covering for Brad and Desi. You did a fine job.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And, I know they do the same for me, but maybe, kind of.
Now, how are we to survive psychically in this environment? I would like to know.
In what in the Trump environment, we just keep pushing along. You know, look, if you've been a longtime listener, you know that I had a really hard time dealing with it for the first probably year and a half. I was in a deep, deep depression. Some of it played out live on the air here because I'm nothing if not honest with you guys. And some days I just can't hold it in. I'll be honest with you. A change in medication, Prozac, has helped me immensely. And a lot of medical marijuana. Aside from that, I'm just trying to put one foot in front of the other and realize this has got to end, and that's all we can do. We need to work to get this man not only out of office, but locked up, because he's a menace to society.
Yeah, you know, this business of Ellen DeGeneres mm-hmm. Embracing that despicable war criminal.
Yeah.
And dolt. Mm-hmm. It's a distraction on the one hand. On the other, it really should bring back point blank the fact that letting bygones be bygones when it comes to war criminals is a way of breeding more war criminals.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, Roger, I'm going to run along because people are calling in.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye. Hi. Who's this? Hello?
Patrick.
Hey, Patrick.
Yes, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to thank you for everything that you're doing. I think CNN, NBC, ABC, the debate. I mean, everybody is really fighting Trump and you know, the protesters outside the Trump rallies, what we're seeing there. You guys are really, really helping Trump get reelected in 2020. I really appreciate what y'all are doing.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're trying to keep him from getting reelected in 2020. Is that what you're saying?
Well, y'all are helping him more than y'all are hurting.
I see. So you're a Trump fan. So tell me, Patrick.
So
how am I helping Trump get reelected by pointing out that he's a grifter and a criminal and a horrible excuse for a human being?
Yeah, no, the rhetoric from y'all's side is great. I mean, you guys.
Okay. Hey, Patrick, you know what? Patrick, I got a little song for you. Patrick, I got a song for you. You can sing along if you like. Here you go. Okay, yeah, we kicked Patrick out of the chat room and he called in. All right, cool. Thanks, Patrick. The phone lines are open, by the way. 954-889-6410. And, we can have a show one day about antidepressants. All I know is it helped me. So there you go. All right, so it took me a second to get what he was saying. Thank you, really. Thank you. Thank us for exposing the criminal actions of this grifter and really sad person. I mean, that's more than anything else. He's just really sad. He's a really sad, sorry excuse for a human being. Just the shit he says. Okay, but we're not focusing on Trump. All right. So I was going through the debate. So they get into Biden and the whole thing about Hunter Biden. By the way, don't name your kid Hunter. Unless you're one of those people, like Patrick probably, who puts, you know, heads of big game animals in their house. Hunter? Really? The thing about, and I'm not going to even play this answer. I think while Hunter Biden may have done nothing illegal, and the last thing I want to do is perpetuate right-wing talking points, the fact of the matter is Hunter Biden capitalized on his father's name and position as vice president. He took a job that he was wholly unqualified for. Again, whether he did anything illegal or not. And Joe Biden's excuse was, well, I never talked to him about it. That doesn't make it okay. He should have said, what is this job that you're taking? You're not qualified for that. Why did they give it to you? Because your name is Biden? Hell no. Please, no. Step down. It's not okay. Joe Biden never did that. So that question happened. All right. Another call. Hi, who's this?
Hey, it's me again.
All right. This is what happens when I work without a producer. So after Biden, the question, they moved on. Oh, that's when they went to the whole Medicare for All. Now, I do want to play some of this for you, and it's a really long clip. This is where... Again, and they've had this discussion on other debates on Medicare for All. But they start with Elizabeth Warren. And yes, it's a legitimate question. Why won't you say that the, taxes will go up? But then explain how Bernie Sanders does that your expenses are going to go down. She's trying to say it, but she just won't say the words.
You've proposed some sweeping plans, free public college, free universal child care, eliminating most Americans' college debt. And you've said how you're going to pay for those plans. But you have not specified how you're going to pay for the most expensive plan, Medicare for All.
It's true.
Will you raise taxes?
Yes.
On
say
the middle
yes,
class
Liz.
Pay,
say
to pay
yes.
For it,
yes,
no?
I will. But
so
the costs will go down.
I have made clear what my principles are here, and that is costs will go up for the wealthy and for big corporations, mm-hmm. and for hardworking middle class families, costs will go down.
Mm-hmm.
The way I see this is. I have been out all around this country. I've done 140 town halls now, been to 27 states and Puerto Rico.
Okay,
should have
so,
done 70,000 selfies.
Now, I'm going to cut her off there because she went on and on and on and without answering the question. So let me cue in a little bit. I should have separated this.
Selfies with no such child has cancer.
Nope.
Care for All.
Okay.
You've here. Endorsed his plan. Should you
going
acknowledge
back and
too?
Asking her so, to follow
the
up.
The way I see this, it is about what kinds of costs middle class families are going to face. So let me be clear on this. Costs will go up. For the wealthy, they will go up for big corporations.
Yeah. Okay,
and
she
for
said it already.
Families, they will go down. I will not sign a bill into law that does not lower costs for middle class families.
Okay.
Mayor Buttigieg,
now,
you
I understand.
Say
hold
Warren
on.
Has-
I understand what she's doing. As Think It Through or Judy Truitt in the YouTube chat just said, she doesn't want to give them that sound clip to use in ads against her. I understand. But she needs to come clean because she sounded just like she was hedging. And then, okay, so next up, they go to Mayo Pete, who did his mansplaining thing.
Has been, quote, evasive about how she's going to pay for Medicare for All. What's your response?
Well, we heard it tonight. A yes or no question that didn't get a yes or no answer. Look, this is why people here in the Midwest are so frustrated with
Washington
in general.
Fuck you, people in the Midwest.
And Capitol Hill in particular.
Uh-huh.
Your signature, Senator,
really?
Is to have a plan for everything, except this.
No, she has a plan for
this. No plan has been laid out to explain how a multi-trillion dollar hole in this Medicare for All plan that Senator Warren is putting forward is supposed to get filled in. And the thing is, we really can deliver health care for every American and move forward with the
we
boldest,
can't.
Biggest transformation
Your plan,
since
Pete,
the inception of
will
Medicare
not work.
Itself. But the way to do it without a giant multi-trillion dollar hole and without having to avoid a yes or no question is Medicare for all who want it. We take a version
Bullshit.
Of Medicare. We let you access it if you want to. And if you prefer to stay on your private plan, you can do that too. That
Bullshit.
Is what most
oh,
Americans
thank you,
want.
Computer
Medicare
voice.
For all who want it.
Bullshit.
Trusting you to make the right decision for your health care
no.
and for your
family. And I'm going to cut him off because, again, that is complete and utter
Bullshit.
And here's the thing. When I was filling in for Brad and Desi last week, and I did a great interview with Steffi Woolhandler. She's a doctor, a physician, one of the co-founders of Physicians for a National Health Program. And she and her partner, her other founder, whose name is escaping me at the moment, wrote a piece that's in the current issue of The Nation magazine. In fact, I think it's in the next print issue. It's currently up online. Here's what I'll do. I'm not going to have time to play that interview for you on the air today. I will tack it on to the end of today's show for the podcast. So it gives you a reason to come and get today's podcast. That interview, they explain why Medicare for All and the public option or Pete Buttigieg's Medicare for All who want it is, frankly,
bullshit.
That it's not the same thing. All so-called Medicare for All plans are not created equal. The fact of the matter is, if the for-profit extortionists, that's what I call the for-profit health insurance companies, are allowed to remain in business and keep pulling money out of the system, the prices can't go down. They will not go down the same way they would if we were all on Medicare for All. We all use the single payer system, so they don't take 20% off the top for, quote, administrative costs. It can't work. These bullshit public option plans will not produce the savings necessary to ensure everyone. So again, I'll include the Steffi Woolhandler interview at the end of today's podcast. So you get kind of two in one. Okay, so then it went on. Let me cue in a little further, if I can, because I really want to get the next part of it. So Pete Buttigieg came in, went back and forth with Elizabeth Warren, then it went with Bernie and Warren, and then here. So let me just cue in a little more.
For your family and...
are what people care about. I've been studying this, you know, for the biggest part of my life.
Thank you, Senator.
Why people go bankrupt.
Can the mayor respond?
Sure.
I don't think the American people are wrong.
No, you are wrong,
Pete.
You're wrong.
Is a choice. And the choice of
the choice of being gouged for everything, the choice of being able to go bankrupt because you got sick
allows you to get that health care. It's just better than Medicare for All, whether you want it or not. And I don't understand why you believe the
only way
to deliver affordable coverage to everybody is to obliterate private plans, kicking 100
because that's how you get the savings. And he was about to say is kicking 100 however many people off of their private insurance. It's not taking anything away from everyone. It's making sure everyone's covered at a lower cost for all of us. So, Pete, you're way out of way here.
Better way to
Thank you, Mayor.
Here we go.
Senator Sanders.
Well, as somebody who wrote the
Here comes
bill,
Bernie.
As I said.
Yes.
Let's be clear. Under the Medicare for All bill that I wrote, premiums are gone. Copayments are gone. Deductibles are gone. All out-of-pocket expenses are gone. We're going to do better than the Canadians do, and that is what they have managed to do. At the end of the day, the overwhelming majority of people will save money on their health care bills.
Yep.
But I do think it is appropriate to acknowledge that taxes will go up.
Yes.
They're going to go up
it's
significantly for the wealthy. And for virtually everybody, the tax increase they pay will be substantially less than what they were paying for premiums and out-of-pocket expenses.
We Senator Warren,
and that's how you do it.
Acknowledge what the senator just said about taxes going up.
So my view and what I have committed to is costs will go down for hardworking middle-class families. I will not embrace a plan like Medicare for all who can afford it that will leave behind millions of people who cannot. And I will not embrace a plan that says people have great insurance right up until you get the diagnosis and the insurance company says, sorry, we're not covering your expensive cancer treatments.
Yes.
We're not covering your expensive...
She's saying all the right things, except she won't just come out and say yes. It's a shell game. We're moving money around. So what she could say is, we'll take the money that you're currently paying for your health care premiums and your deductible and your co-pays, and we'll cut it in about half, and you'll pay half as much extra in taxes. How's that? That makes sense. So that went around. But Bernie was spot on. So after this exchange, we're going to run out of time today. By the way, this Patrick idiot keeps calling. He just keeps calling and calling and calling. I'm just letting him, wear himself out because I can tell it's him from the caller ID, in case you were wondering. What else? Kamala Harris, I'm not a fan, but when the question came to her, I give her props for this.
This is the sixth debate we have had in this presidential cycle, and not nearly one word with all of these discussions about health care on women's access to reproductive health care, which is under full-on attack in America today. And it's outrageous. There are states that have passed laws that will virtually prevent women from having access to reproductive health care. And it is not an exaggeration to say women will die. Poor women, women of color will die because these Republican legislatures in these various states who are out of touch with America are telling women what to do with our bodies. Women are the majority of the population in this country. People need to keep their hands off of women's bodies and let women make the decisions about their own lives.
Thank you, Senator.
All right. Kamala Harris, good point. And good for her for pointing it out that they just, never asked about it. Later on in the debate, they did, finally. But in, what did she say, six debates, they never asked about a woman's right to choose what she does with her body. That's why these debates are so offensive, because the questions are just god-awful. Let's see, what else? I'm trying to, we don't have a whole lot of time here. So, all right. I want to, Joe Biden. I've got a real problem with Joe Biden. I yesterday I talked about I want to see the losing candidates fall through the trapdoor underneath them on the stage so that they, disappear for all eternity. That obviously didn't happen, but I put out a little feeler on Twitter and Facebook and said, that's my fantasy. What three after the debate do you think should, be eliminated through the trap door? And I realized I said Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, and who was my third one? Who was the third one I said? It was somebody I didn't even take much. Oh, Tulsi Gabbard. That's who I said. And then I realized, oh, my God, I didn't include Joe Biden in there. Joe Biden, sorry, needs to go.
Go to Joe 30330.
Joe.
30330. Go to Joe 30330.
Okay, sorry, just had to get that out of my system for today. So I need four, but a lot more need to go. So Joe Biden, let's see. Here's one. There are so many good ones here. Okay, this is what I want to do. There was a point where Elizabeth Warren's past came up, not her past as a Republican, her past as the person behind enacting getting the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau made into an actual agency. So Joe Biden tried to take credit for it.
So you started this question with how you got something done. You know, following the financial crash of 2008, I had an idea for a consumer agency that would keep giant banks from cheating people. And all of the Washington insiders and strategic geniuses said, don't even try, because you will never get it passed. And sure enough, the big banks fought us, the Republicans fought us, some of the Democrats fought us. But we got that agency passed into law. It has now forced big banks to return more than $12 billion directly to people they cheated. I served in the Obama administration. I know what we can do by executive authority, and I will use it. In Congress, on the first day, I will pass my anti-corruption bill, which will beat back the influence of money and repeal the filibuster. And the third, we want to get something done in America. We have to get out there and fight for the things that touch people's lives.
I agreed with the great job she did. And I went on the floor and got you votes. I got votes for that bill.
I
convinced people to vote for it. So let's get those things straight, too.
Senator Warren, do you want to respond?
Here we go.
I am deeply grateful to President Obama, who fought so hard to make sure that agency was passed into law. And I am deeply grateful to every single person who fought for it and who helped pass it into law. But understand,
you did a hell of a job of your job.
Thank you. But understand this. It was a dream big, fight hard.
Absolutely.
People told me, go for something little. Go for something small. Go for something that the big corporations will be able to accept.
Thank you, Senator.
No, let's go for an agency that will make structural change in our economy. And
Senator,
President Obama said, I will fight for that. And he sometimes had to fight against people in his own administration. We have to be willing to
make big structural change. So, you know what? Elizabeth Warren, aside from her non-answers on raising taxes to pay for Medicare for All, was good. And in fact, you know, reading the papers today, most of the newspapers had her as the, quote, winner. I thought she did great. I thought Bernie Sanders did better. I thought Joe was condescending BS. Yeah, absolutely. I thought Pete Buttigieg was the biggest condescender. Oh, my God. Shut the fuck up. Don't mansplaining to everyone on stage. I'm sick of being lectured by a twerp who's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. It's enough, Pete, who used to claim he was for Medicare for All and now wants to push some bullshit Medicare for All who want it program. That cannot work. Again, I invite you to download today's podcast. You can subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And somebody in the chat room just said, can I get a free one just for today? My podcasts are free. And you know that my work is 100% listener supported. I don't have my podcast behind a paywall because I know so many people are hurting, still hurting from the Bush depression. That wasn't a recession. It was a depression. And I run this show sort of like public radio, which is I live off of your donations. That's my salary. But it's all voluntary. If you can afford it and you enjoy the show, I hope you'll do a recurring monthly donation or a once in a while, you know, drop a few bucks in my account. Whatever you can afford, whatever you feel comfortable with. In the meantime, get the podcast, share it. A lot of people can't afford to pay $5 a month for every podcast they want to hear. I can't. And so I don't pass that along to anyone else. So the podcasts are free. Subscribe away. Enjoy them, please, I hope. And if you can afford it and you think it's worth it, then kick in a donation from time to time. And I'll appreciate it. All right. We are out of time. But as I said, I'm going to tack on the interview with Dr. Steffi Woolhandler at the end of this podcast for today's show. That will explain why Pete Buttigieg's Medicare for All Who Want It plan is just complete
bullshit
and cannot work. Okay? So thank you, as always, for listening. Thank you for being here. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. We're going to start interviewing some congressional candidates who are primarying incumbents and, you know, hoping to help keep the House blue. So we got that looking forward to, too. Thanks again, everyone. See you tomorrow. Bye. And welcome back to those of you who knew to download today's podcast. As I mentioned during the actual program, we talked a lot about Medicare for All, and I was harsh on Pete Buttigieg and some of the other candidates who thought that they could get away with pretending that they were supportive of Medicare for All, but instead putting other caveats on it, like Obamacare with a public option, or as Buttigieg says, Medicare for All Who Want It. It doesn't work that way. So in the October 21st issue of The Nation, the print issue, there's an article that's going to appear, The Public Option on Healthcare is a Poison Pill. Now, it's already available online. If you go to thenation.com, you'll find this article there. It's written by David Himmelstein and Steffi Woolhandler. They are the co-founders of Physicians for a National Health Plan, and they've been doing this work for a long, long time. And in this article, they explain what the difference is and why these public option plans or the plans like Buttigieg is promoting can't work. So I spoke with Dr. Steffi Woolhandler last week when I was filling in for Brad and Desi. Figured I'd play it on my show one of these days. We just haven't had time because there's so much going on. So I share it with you today on this edition, this extended edition of the Nicole Sandler Show podcast. Enjoy. Dr. Steffi Woolhandler is our guest. She's one of the authors of a new article that appears in the October 21st print edition of The Nation magazine, and is online now at thenation.com. I'll link to it from bradblog.com, where I post the podcast of today's show. The article is entitled, The Public Option on Healthcare is a Poison Pill. And Steffi, I'm so glad you wrote this, because as I'm watching the debate over who we're going to nominate to run against Donald Trump in November of 2020, one of the biggest issues for most Americans is healthcare. And there are a lot of, it seems like everybody has jumped on the Bernie Sanders bandwagon in calling for Medicare for All. But what each candidate is calling Medicare for All, they're not all created equal, are they?
No. I mean, maintaining a substantial role for private insurance companies would poison the system. The inclusion of private insurance companies raises system-wide costs. It raises system-wide costs because they have huge overhead and profits that take out of the system. And they're pretty smart about pushing the high costs onto the taxpayers and onto people enrolled in Medicare or public option. So, you know, if the private insurance companies just had their high overhead and profits and their own enrollees had to pay for all of that cost, they would be outcompeted. Nobody would enroll in private insurance. Why would you pay 12 or 14% overhead for private insurance when public Medicare runs for about 2% overhead? The problem is that the insurance industry has that high overhead, and it pushes those costs onto other insurers and onto the taxpayers, making the entire healthcare system more expensive.
Exactly. So for the candidates, for instance, let's pull Joe Biden, for example. Joe Biden is talking about he wants to just build on the Affordable Care Act, which served its purpose. I will admit that. I survived lung cancer because I had insurance through the Affordable Care Act. But I think of how much better it would have been if I had Medicare. So Joe Biden is saying, well, we'll put in a public option. The problem, as I understand, and more so from reading your article up at The Nation, is that if you still have the for-profit insurance industry pulling so much money out of the system and a public option where not everybody is bought into a Medicare system, those extra costs are still baked in the cake. I mean, you can't lower costs for everybody if not everybody is in the same not-for-profit plan, right? Or am I oversimplifying it?
Well, that's absolutely true, that the private insurance industry not only has their own high overhead, which is 12% in the commercial private insurance, 14% in the private Medicare Advantage plans, they not only have their own high overhead and profits that they add to the cost, but they impose huge costs on doctors and hospitals, because if you have a multi-payer system, it means doctors and hospitals have to spend a huge share of their total revenues just sending bills and dealing with insurance paperwork. And we estimate that the excess administrative costs of American hospitals relative to countries that have a Medicare for all system, the excess administrative costs of American hospitals are about 12% of total hospital costs, which is a huge amount of money every year just to be spending sending hospital bills. So you have huge administrative costs at the insurance level. You have huge administrative costs at the doctor and hospital level. And consequently, for any amount of money that you spend, you end up getting less actual health care and much more bureaucracy. And the extra cost of that bureaucracy does make the universal health care very expensive, and frankly, probably puts universal health care without copayments and deductibles financially out of reach. That system where everyone has care, where there's no copayments, no deductibles for medically necessary care, that's only affordable if you capture the administrative savings of having a single payer.
Right. And that means everybody, one payer, the government, for all the bills, so they don't have to deal with, you know, sending the paperwork for each individual insurance company out. That's where the overhead comes in. So in this article at The Nation, you say public option proposals come in three main varieties. And the first one is simple buy-in, as we were just discussing. That's like the proposal made by Joe Biden. And you say Pete Buttigieg, who's got a catchy name on it, is like Medicare for all who want it, or some nonsense like that. But it isn't really Medicare for all, right? The next one.
In order to have a simple buy-in, you have to have $8,000 or $10,000 in your pocket to go and buy into Medicare. You know, and how many of the uninsured can actually afford that? A few of them can. You know, having the option of buying into Medicare is probably pretty good for those who can afford it. But it's not going to get you to universal health care, just saying you can buy into Medicare for the full cost of it. So the simple buy-in, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's other than the fact that it doesn't get you anywhere close to universal health care.
Gotcha. All right. So the second one, the second variant that you talk about is pay or play. You say this is similar to the plan advanced by the Center for American Progress and endorsed by Beto O'Rourke. So what's the difference between pay or play and the simple buy-in?
Yeah, well, under the pay or play, employers would have the option of either purchasing private insurance for their employees or paying an 8% payroll tax. And what that would mean is that many employers with low-wage workers would find it cheaper to turn their workers over to the public plan and pay the payroll tax, whereas employers of highly paid workers, lots of young male workers who use less health care, they would find it in their financial interest to just provide the insurance and not pay that very high payroll tax. So you're going to end up with a two-tiered system with basically tech firms and finance firms and similar firms buying private insurance and saving some money, not having to pay the tax, whereas the tax-funded system would get a collection of poorer workers and sicker workers. So it's unequal. I think the bigger problem is what we're talking about in terms of the and then people who didn't get insurance through their employer would automatically be enrolled in the public system,
right,
but they would have to pay large copayments and deductibles, and probably many of them would be paying premiums. So you could be in the public system, but you'd still have very high out-of-pocket costs. And I think it's actually an illustration of the more general point we were talking about, is that if you leave the private insurance industry in the healthcare system, the costs are going to be very, very high, and it's going to put pressure on the system to charge patients premiums, copayments, and deductibles because just the costs otherwise are so high. So you end up with a system that perhaps enrolls everyone, but like the Affordable Care Act, often enrolls them in plans that come with very high costs to the
right.
patient.
And again, so it all goes it all goes back to the fact that these for-profit insurance companies, I call them extortionists, so we can get into that in a little while, but either you pay up or you go don't get health care, that they're still sucking so much profit out of what should be a nonprofit enterprise. It shouldn't be a business. It shouldn't be make a money-making venture.
Right.
That because of the, all the profits they're pulling out, the savings aren't being passed along to the final consumer.
Yes, absolutely. The savings aren't there both because of their profits and the huge administrative apparatus that they impose on the system in order to extract their profits.
Gotcha.
So the administrative costs of private insurance this year are just a little under $300 billion. You know, it's we're probably around $250, $270 billion for their administration and profits. That's really a lot of money, even in healthcare. And that having to pay that money, having that be part of the healthcare system means the money is really not going to be there for the patients to cover their copay, to get rid of their copayments, get rid of their deductibles, and make sure that the whole system is affordable.
Gotcha. Now, the third of these variant of the public option plan is, I think, the scariest of all. This is the one, Medicare Advantage for All, and you say this is the one favored by Kamala Harris, which is frustrating because she, at the beginning, was saying, oh, I'm all in, Medicare for All, I'm with Bernie, and then she kept backtracking, and then basically what she's a proponent of is a Medicare Advantage for All, which is the for-profit insurance companies run the Medicare Advantage programs. That's the problem with Medicare Advantage now, right?
Yes. Well, the Medicare Advantage program allows people who turn 65 to either go into the traditional Medicare, which is like really like a single-payer system, but just for the people who are in it, let's say, or they can enroll in the Medicare Advantage plan, which is a private insurance plan, like a managed care plan, with a narrow network of providers with restrictions, what hospitals you can go to. Those plans have overhead of between 13.7% and 14%. And the way they make their money is by cherry picking.
Yep.
Healthier patients, lemon dropping, getting rid of their enrollees who get sick, they often do that through network restrictions. So they'll make it difficult for people who need specialists to see specialists because they'll restrict the network. And then because of the way Medicare pays Medicare Advantage, they often make tons of money by upcoding. That is, telling Medicare that the patients are much sicker than they actually are. So Medicare, the taxpayers will give Medicare Advantage a big boost in their premiums, hundreds of dollars a month extra from the taxpayers in premiums if the patient, for instance, has arthritis, right?
Okay,
now, virtually everyone over the age of 65 could say they have arthritis, but most of the times that doesn't appear as a diagnosis. The Medicare Advantage plans label people as having arthritis when they have, really relatively minor pain. They label people as having depression when they get sad from time to time. As it turns out, this is sort of a medical issue. In older people, it's fairly easy to label people with diagnoses like lung disease or heart disease, when in fact those changes are very mild and not really causing the patient symptoms. Just as you age, your lung function and heart function gets to be a little bit weaker. And if it's not causing you symptoms, you don't need to have those labels placed on you. And yet the Medicare Advantage plans can profit by putting those labels onto people and telling Medicare, oh, this patient, she's got arthritis, she's got depression, she's got heart failure, she's got lung problems, when in fact the patient's pretty much asymptomatic or, you know, requires really minimal care for those sets of symptoms. So that's what the Medicare Advantage plans have been doing. This is not theoretical, what I'm talking to you about. It's been documented repeatedly by economists and others that the Medicare Advantage plans are exaggerating these diagnoses. Often they're just lying about the diagnoses. That's found sometimes in CMS audits. Mm-hmm. And consequently, the taxpayers are paying them these huge premiums for, you know, on the assumption that the patients are very sick, when in fact the patients are not nearly as sick as what they're saying. And the MedPAC, which is Congress's Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, that's a watchdog agency set up by Congress, MedPAC year in and year out comes in with a report saying Medicare is overpaying Medicare Advantage plans because of upcoding.
Wow.
We ought to be cutting the payments to Medicare Advantage. But repeatedly, the private insurance industry has intervened, they've lobbied, and prevented the CMS, the administrators of Medicare, prevented the taxpayers from lowering these very high payments to Medicare Advantage plans. And, of course, the Trump administration has just been pouring money
yep.
from the taxpayers into private insurance. They've given them two large raises in the premiums they receive, even though we're still hearing from MedPAC that they're already overpaid. And they're going to let Medicare Advantage plans do things like offer patients free groceries and dog food.
Oh, my God.
Free transportation. And, you know, if people need that stuff, that's fine. But there's no reason why that needs to be that should be distributed at the discretion of the private insurance industry. If we're going to provide those services, which perhaps sometimes we should, they need to be distributed fairly and not by the private insurance industry.
Of course.
You know, the thing with Medicare Advantage is from time to time, you know, there have been good administrators in CMS off and on over the decades that we've had these Medicare managed care, private managed care programs. The administrators sometimes try to control the misbehaviors of these Medicare Advantage plans. Not the Trump administration, but other administrations have, in fact, tried to control Medicare Advantage, and they've always failed. And the private health insurance industry in the United States is incredibly good at cheating. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly creative, and even when good administrators, good regulators are in Washington trying to make the program work, the private insurance industry year in, year out has been able to game the system and raise costs to taxpayers.
Sure. And the other thing about Medicare Advantage that I think is the main problem with it is that they can still deny your claims. They can say, nope, you're not covered for that. We're not covering that medication. We're not covering that procedure. We're not covering this hospitalization, because once again, it is a private for-profit company administering the plan, as opposed to if you are in Medicare with a Medicare supplemental, as opposed to a Medicare Advantage plan, they don't turn you down. You can pick whatever doctor you want. You can go to whatever yeah. hospital you want. There are no networks to adhere to, and they can't say, we're not paying this claim, right?
Right. No, that's absolutely true. If something is a benefit under Medicare, it's a benefit at whatever doctor or hospital you go to. And that's very important if you're sick. You know, if you're lucky enough to be a very healthy person,
then it's fine.
It probably doesn't matter. That's
right.
Fine. You go to the doctor in the network and, you know, whatever, you get your checkup. But if someone is really sick, for instance, if they have a rare cancer or a surgically complicated cancer, they may really need to be at a cancer center.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have a rare disease of any type. You may want to go to an academic medical center or to a specialist. And they may not be with, you know, often the Medicare Advantage plans will not allow expensive specialists into their networks. And the patient is really out of luck. And, of course, what the Medicare Advantage plan wants to see is they want you to leave Medicare Advantage and go back to traditional Medicare. which is what probably that's what the patient should do. It's in their interest. But the effect of that is that all this money is being paid to Medicare Advantage. And when patients get really, really sick, they're pushed out of Medicare Advantage and ending up back in traditional Medicare, being paid for by the taxpayers and raising the cost to the taxpayers. So,
right. And the other thing,
a lot of cheating going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. That what I've learned, because my husband is on Medicare, I'm still 5 years away. I mean, I never thought I'd get to the point where I'd wish to be 65 years old, but here I turn 60 next month, which is the worst time because everything is so expensive and it's hard to get coverage. But back to Medicare for a moment. Medicare Advantage, the reason people choose Medicare Advantage is because of cost, because they give you these incentives. They give you everything, and in the case of, say, my husband, at no additional premium. So he doesn't have an extra premium for the Medicare Advantage plan that covers, in addition to medical, dental, vision, gym membership. As you were talking, they give you all these extras. Now, if you were to get a straight Medicare supplemental, the cost is too prohibitive for us. And that's why people do go to these Medicare Advantage plans, because they're taxpayer subsidized. And but you're leaving yourself open to be turned down when you get sick. That's the catch 22, right?
That's true. For the average enrollee in Medicare Advantage, they save about $50 a month, which is real money for a lot of people.
Oh, for him, it would have been, it would be a few hundred, it would be a few hundred dollars a month in our case. It comes out to
about
money.
Average, the average is about 50. You know, so there are some savings for people, and that's of course why people enroll. And you know, and I have no problem with people enrolling if that's going to save them a bunch of money. But the restriction you get is that you can't see the doctor of your choice. You can't see the, you can't go to specialized providers if that issue comes up. And, you know, you're dealing with these networks and managed care rules, which you don't have to deal with in traditional Medicare. And, you know, the reason the Medicare Advantage can give you the $500 or so a year, $600 a year in additional benefits, is mostly they've cheated so much and gotten so much higher premiums in the first place.
Right.
They've raised the price to the entire system. To the taxpayers, to the folks who enroll in traditional Medicare, we're all paying for this through their cheating. And then of the several thousand dollars per enrollee that they've cheated the taxpayers out of each year, they kick back, you know, $50 or $60 a month on average in these additional benefits. But it's a losing system for the American taxpayers as a whole. You know, it can make sense for an individual patient, but it's a losing system for Americans as a whole.
So what do you say? We're speaking with Dr. Steffi Wohlhandler. She, along with Dr. David Himmelstein, wrote a piece in the, it's in the October 21st print edition of The Nation magazine. It's online now. It's titled, "The Public Option on Healthcare is a Poison Pill." The industry loves this debate on the left because they're getting away with calling these public option ideas Medicare for all when they're not. And in fact, that's the point of this article, is that you say savings would come from Medicare for all, will not come from a straight, you know, a plan that offers a public option. It's not the same thing, although some of these candidates and insurance companies will tell you they are.
No, Medicare for all is a single system that generates huge administrative savings, probably about $500 billion in administrative savings, and you take per year, and you take that $500 billion and use it to get rid of co-payments and deductibles and other out-of-pocket costs. That's the core economics of Medicare, single-payer Medicare for all. Get rid of all the administrative savings and spend that money on care. And you can only do that with a single payer. If you leave those public insurance companies in the middle of it, you're going to have their administrative overhead costs. You're going to have the doctors and hospitals administrative costs. You're going to lose most of that $500 billion, $500 billion in annual savings. And you're just not going to have the money to provide care for everyone. So that's the reason why private insurance is a public pill, a poison pill.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the entire system unaffordable.
I gotcha. And I hope other people are getting it. I hope they read this article. Again, Steffi Woolhandler, you and David Himmelstein are the co-founders of Physicians for National Health Program. You've been around for a long time doing this work. We're closer than ever before, thanks to Bernie Sanders, I believe, in pushing for a Medicare for all single-payer healthcare system in this country. Do you see it there as like something you can grab, or do you feel like we're close to it?
Well, the thing that's really encouraging is there's actually a mass movement now for single-payer Medicare for all. It used to be this wonky question that I'm a health policy professor and a physician, so the health policy community and the physician community used to talk about it, you know, and debate about it, but there was not a mass movement until really beginning in 2016 with the Sanders campaign. So now there's much more momentum behind it. Many candidates are talking about it. Some, you know, talking about it as a real single payer system. Some just using the words Medicare for all. But the candidates, in a way, are less important than the fact that the American people really seem mobilized and interested in the issue in this way that I've never seen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I'm very encouraged. And I think if people listen to podcasts, educate themselves, really learn the ins and outs of how to make a Medicare for all single payer system work, we're well on our way to achieving it.
Awesome. Well, Steffi Woolhandler, I know you've been doing this work for a long, long time. We spoke years ago on PNHP issues, and thank you for doing this. I will put a link to your article up at The Nation at both my website and on bradblog.com. I hope people read it because it's a great informative piece with facts about what these different candidates are proposing and how they differ and what's really Medicare for all and what isn't. So thank you for this. Thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Okay. It's been my pleasure.
And there you have it. I hope that helped explain why Pete Buttigieg's plan just won't work. And there's your extended Nicole Sandler Show podcast for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.